Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
My name is Eric 13, and I am here for a terribly professional double feature with Michael Kester.
Terribly professional. That's kind of the general vibe of the entire podcast, I think. I like that.
That's my one.
I'm glad it only took us exactly 12 years to come up with it.
I don't believe that we have made it to this day, both because of the movies that are on the fucking show, but also just because here we are at the end of year 11 of double feature.
Yeah, I know. There was a time approximately 52 weeks ago. Well, let's say 54 weeks ago, to be optimistic, where we weren't sure we were going to get to a year 11.
Yeah, I know. I constantly feel that way about the show.
There was a point in the world where we went, I don't know, 10's an arbitrarily round number.
Hey,
do we really want to sign ourselves up for at least 5 to 10 more years?
That's how I felt about my 30s. Listen, this is a great moment to promote the Patreon.
Is it?
It is the end of year 11. We want to do a year 12. We haven't been talking about it a bunch, but if we're going to do a year 12, we're going to be showing up next week and the week after and the week after that. We don't have a gap to go off and raise funds. We have to do it this minute. So I know I've mentioned it a little bit here and there, but this is really the moment to try to get the fucking money together. I just want to direct people over to the Patreon. They know where it is. It's patreon.com/double feature. Thanks to all of the reoccurring people on there, of course. But look, if you've never put money into a Patreon, you don't do the crowdfunding thing, this just isn't part of your world. It's as easy as any of those apps you've downloaded to your phone. In fact, it's easier. You use the internet. You don't even need an app. If you've ever used Postmates or bought something on Amazon, it's even easier than that. You go to patreon.com/double feature. You just say you want to give to the thing. You put $2 in. That's really all I'm asking here. I want people giving $0 to move that up to $2 so that we can do next year of the show. That's my ask. I think it's pretty straightforward, right?
It seems easy, yeah. That comes out to $24 a year.
That's
less than the price of your morning cup of coffee.
And if you decided it was a stupid idea, you can just cancel right away. You can cancel. If you have buyer's remorse.
You cancel the last week of the month and then opt back in at the.
Please don't do that, guys. Please. Nobody's winning here. That does happen. And that's why we find ourselves in this scenario. But look, I get it. Circumstances change. Hopefully those circumstances can change from $0 to $2. I just want to bring some new people on board. We're doing a thing here, and I like inviting new people into this world and getting them to be a part of this together. So as we're growing that schedule for next year, coming up with the recommendations, planning new additional content, I want to bring new listeners on board. And the best time to do that is when 1 year is closing and hopefully another year is beginning, because we get to start the slate clean. It's like doing an entirely new podcast where Michael's not going to bring up the same 10-year-old jokes that no one will understand on the show. We're not going to say reference movies from 4.5 years ago that you haven't seen. All right, look, I know our show has some baggage, but we try to leave it at the door and we try to start fresh. Now, I will say, patreon.com/double feature. I will say the time to give to the Patreon might be right now, but the time to end the year is not quite here, because although we hit the Patreon deadline, we have one last full normal episode today, the next 40 some minutes of your life.
Mm-hmm.
To talk about two movies before doing the crazy thing we always do at the end of the year next time. It's kind of the last episode. It's sort of the first episode of the next year.
Right.
It's a look back on what happened in year 11 to catch you up, and there's no spoilers. We'll talk about that more at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Today, though, Mm-hmm. The reward is really that we got here, not just to the end of the year, but to what the hell are these two movies on the show?
Yeah, this is a those fucking kids double feature.
that is the worst way to put it.
We're gonna do.
Did you know you shouldn't joke about things like that?
I mean, I think I approximately have about 44 minutes left to keep joking about that.
Yeah.
So we're going to do Eighth Grade, which is Bo Burnham's first film / masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the 24 minute mark, we'll switch to a film that you have probably heard of and may even have come to today's show intentionally not seeing. That's a film called, the title is A Serbian Film. It's not just any random film made in Serbia.
It's like a viewer's choice. You just watch any Serbian film and then you come to the show and we just discuss our favorite Serbian films. No, the problem with the Serbian film, I'll clue you into a bit of the intellect of the film, is that the other films from Serbia might be fucking terrible. And perhaps this has motivated a Serbian film. A movie that, as is stated, is much more intelligent than its, let's say, its reputation. I don't even want to say it is on the surface, because I think you kind of know that when you see it.
Mm-hmm.
But then its reputation may precede it.
Absolutely.
And fuck, will we get to that, but just not right now, because we got to start with the year's most dangerous film.
Yeah.
Eighth fucking grade.
So we did that. Hey, patreon.com/double feature. There's all these shows that you don't get to listen to if you're not giving us $2. One of those was an AC from the beginning of this year, wherein we discussed the age old, you know, century old question. Can one still make dangerous film, and what dangerous films existed in 2018?
I know you don't subscribe to the Patreon, Michael, but there is a level for the AC. You can't just wing in $2 to be getting it. We gotta,
yeah, but if you wing in $2, tiers. It's really easy to bump it up to 10.
Oh, there you go. Is 10 where it, oof, that's under promise, over deliver. But you're right. That is, the AC is where we talked about dangerous films. We've mentioned that AC episode a lot, but what was crazy to us on that episode, spoilers are coming, guys. Michael warned you. Skip away if you haven't seen Eighth Grade. Skip off a Serbian film if you haven't seen Serbian film. What really dawned on both of us, I think, during that episode is, wow, Eighth Grade had more of an impact.
Yeah.
It made an imprint. There was an impression on my soul coming away from that film that sort of snuck up on me in talking about it.
Yeah. It's interesting because conversations about subversion never fail to end up in their own version. Oh my God, I can't even say that. I'm trying to figure out the best way to put it.
Michael's going to do a rap for us really quick.
They subvert themselves. When you're trying to think about the most subversive films and you're really diving in, you end up coming back up on the other side of the bell curve into the sort of pastel subversion. Because I think right at the bottom of the bell curve is where you get, you know, fucking Hostel 2.
Yeah.
And then I think you work your way back up into things where you don't even, I mean, past Todd Solondz, where you don't even realize how subversive it is, because it has literally subverted your own psyche and planted itself behind it.
Yeah.
In Eighth Grade, coming away from it and having that conversation sort of became the poster child for that, where I went, well, I mean, that film did succeed in making me terribly uncomfortable. It changed the way I thought about stuff. It showed me something I'd never seen before in film. It made me squirm. It made me not want to watch the movie, and it made me cringe. It did all the things. It did all the things that Cannibal Holocaust makes you do.
Yeah.
Check the box.
Not one I thought would be mentioning Cannibal Holocaust on the show, but there it is.
You can check every box for every visceral feeling that goes through your body, except this has awkward Szechuan sauce moments and weird, you know,
don't those play out different?
Arguably statutory car rides that really create this sort of, they put you in a place that you and I as adults, or, you know, wherever, whatever people think we are now, I don't really care, but it's not something we've forgotten. It's sort of just kind of, it's an untapped memory of being that way. And it's so eloquently put in front of us, and the dynamics of these characters. It's, I think we talked, I don't remember if we talked about this exactly on the AC, but come back to me. Let me know if you did. But this movie, Eighth Grade, was the first film where I wasn't sure if I identified more with the kid or the parent.
Oh, interesting.
And it's not because I'm growing up. It's because they were both human beings.
Here's the part about it that, as I've thought about it more, even after the AC, has fucked with me more. I think as we've thought about all the movies on the show that do something that's really sort of out there, sort of the word we used a lot on that episode was dangerous. As we've thought about dangerous movies, we've really been looking at a lot of these movies that it was a good time for counterculture. It was a good time to do, I mean, that's when, you know, a Serbian film came out in a world where it was all right to do that. The thing that made me feel most adult, most the person that is being countered about this movie is that the schism in age, we're talking about eighth grade now. I'm too far, you know, to get back to your point, we're much closer to the adult side than the child side, than the point of view of the film. Mm-hmm. And so I'm now, what I'm tap dancing around here is that there's this feeling that I have gotten as I've gotten older, or as the world's changed, who knows, where I watch a movie now and I often think, ooh, should you have done that? I don't know if you could do that. When I was 10 years younger, I thought, oh yeah, fuck yeah, do whatever, say everything, drag everything into the light, no taboos, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as I've gotten older, I've just become very, very sensitive. There's words we don't say on the show. There's phrases we don't use. We just made a joke about that on I think it was the Dracula show, where we were mm-hmm. talking about Laura's phrase on the show. Go back and check that episode out. The Dracula AD 1972 show. But yeah, there's just things. There's sort of the idea of being not just a contrarian, but a provocateur.
Yeah.
That was something that I felt like backing 10 years ago. And as society has swung the other way, again, see my fucking TED talk on these these issues from Princess and the Frog. As society swung the other way, I feel like I want to be on the right side of history. I don't want to be out there provoking people to stir up humanity and see what the reaction is. I want to be, you know, siding with good. And so when a movie like Eighth Grade comes along, it makes me feel like, ooh, Eighth Grade, I don't know if you can talk about this. I don't know if this is safe for discussion. Mm-hmm. It's not just that I watch and go, wow, what a dangerous film, and hold it up. In the theater, I feel uncomfortable because I go, should I be seeing this? It's not dangerous in the way that I watch it and go, yeah, we're making dangerous movies. We're on the side of dangerous cinema.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching it as a victim of the film. I'm watching it as the intended target of the film, going, oh, I don't know if it's okay to, you know, we're talking about, again, something that we used to discuss more openly on the show, especially when we were closer to the age, which is that in both of our lives, and in the United States, at least where we grew up, and I think this is pretty safe to assume a little more broadly, humans come into sexuality at a much younger age than we talk about them coming into sexuality.
Right.
They start, like, the conversations they have in eighth grade about when are they sexting, right?
Right.
Or Snapchat. And those are things that I remember making adults really uncomfortable. And now I watch them and I'm in my 30s and I go, oh, I can't watch a movie where teenagers are talking, people in fucking eighth grade,
right,
are talking about, you know, like learning about sexuality. I'm now so far outside of an area of even possibly advocating for that being safe and cool that now it's scary and it's dangerous to me.
Sure. And I mean, that point in and of itself is kind of the core of what blows this movie wide open for me, which is that essentially the conversation is like, hey, people, you know, a human understands a lot more about the world than we give them credit for too late.
Yeah.
And it's kind of this, it's sort of a portrait of how adulthood teaches itself to you.
Yeah.
At,
well, because
at
we don't want to think
pace.
About people that young.
Sure.
Learning about sex for the first time.
Sure.
And I don't know exactly why that is. I mean,
because sex is taboo at that age.
Yeah.
And it's because there's a sort of murky conversation that is somewhere in between, you know, talking to somebody about sex and allowing somebody to have sex. And the thing that's interesting is the difference between sex and sexuality and how those two things are separate. And an eighth grader needs to know all about the first one, and the second one needs to come later. But if an eighth grader isn't given the tools to understand the first one, then they both come at once. And that's maybe not an ideal scenario.
Well, when we see the most powerful thing I think the movie does is just by following and having transparency into what this young girl's life is actually like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the film wins. The film is on the right side, because if we were to really be able to see the life of someone in middle school entering high school for the first time, they are doing and saying and talking about a lot of things that, as people are older, would make us uncomfortable. Because we like to think there is some preservation of innocence back then. And part of that, especially today, is shutting out the hard parts of their reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were a lot of moments in this movie that, when you're watching it, feel like you know you're seeing something special. You know there's something really visionary in front of you. I mean, I think most of the films, I watch a lot of films and I see a lot of value in them. But you and I have talked about this before on the show. You kind of watch a film and go, oh, you're doing a lot of good things, film. And then maybe hope that it doesn't fuck it all up by the end of the movie. That's kind of how you go through and watch it. Very rarely anymore do they just wash over me where my mouth hangs open the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I already knew from the opening, Elsie Fisher's direct to camera thing. She's just such a fucking star. Like, I can't wait to see what else she does, because mm-hmm. just the way she delivers, I mean, the skill, the absolute talent she demonstrates, and just the sort of like awkward, humble invitation into her world. It's just, there's like a crazy amount of charisma to her. So already from the opening of the movie, I know, okay, this is a special thing. This is an amazing thing. The scene that just like gripped me, where there's the fucking school shooting practice. I mean, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know how else to, our audience, when I saw this in a theater, I saw this in a little tiny theater, one of my favorite places to see movies. It's like four rows of people. You're all really tightly packed. And when the school shooting practice starts, the audience audibly gasped at it.
Mm-hmm.
And as it went on, people were looking at each other, strangers in the theater. I'm turning to a person next to me I've never met in my life, a total stranger packed in this little movie, with our mouths open going, what are we seeing right mm-hmm. now? And it's horrifying. And I almost don't want to talk about that scene, because part of the mastery of it, I mean, we really just have to force ourselves to do it, but part of the mastery of it is how effortlessly. It shows it. The sort of like lack of weight that it assigns mm-hmm. to what to us is a horrifying thing that we all sort of know is happening. We know kids practice drills for school shootings. We know kids are murdered in school at an even younger age than this. And we just don't think about it because it's so awful. We can't mentally parse it. And so the power of how blasé it's treated in the movie, like we just cut to it and we're just doing it. And the movie knows it's doing it, but it doesn't rub your face in it.
Mm-mm.
In fact, it one-ups itself by making the, you know, the horror of the reality that it's come to that doesn't even get its own moment to shine because she is busy doing what we would all do in school during these drills. You fucking go over and talk to your friends.
Yeah.
You know, you wait till the teacher's not looking and you scoot away and then you go talk to this boy that you like. And what do they talk about? They talk about taking naked selfies. Mm-hmm. It's like danger. We escape one danger zone. We go into another. And the movie's just ho-hum about it, treating it like, oh, it's whatever. We're just doing a little thing. Don't worry about it. And then transitions into how to give blowjobs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just thing after thing that I can't believe. And the audience was just in knots over it. And so she goes home. She chokes down this banana, which is just fucking hilarious. So, I mean, also the temperature of the movie is constantly impressing me because the movie is running along at this speed. And I haven't even dealt with the fact that we're in a school shooting practice, let alone naked selfies, let alone blowjob, enough to catch up with this laugh that the movie got out of me and kind of choking on the banana, throwing it at her dad, running out of the room. Like the film is still having its intended impact, even though mentally I'm laps behind what it's doing. And I thought that school shooting was such a perfect example of what, you know, what I have trouble talking about with the sexual baggage of just how we discuss something this sensitive, because the school shooting is something that right on its face, we know, oh, we should be able to address this. And the mere fact that showing it makes everybody in a theater gasp.
Yeah.
It's so blatantly transparent right on the fucking surface what's going on, that we all know it's happening. We don't talk about it. And when somebody else mentions the thing you're not supposed to mention, we all go, ooh, don't discuss it out loud. That's a part of society we've been mentally ignoring because we can't fucking deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And what is that if not every other part of the movie? You know, that's the thing that even I can call that out on the show when I have trouble really talking about like representing sexuality of middle schoolers. But I think the car scene that we've mentioned a little bit, isn't that sort of the same thing?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a thing that happens that we don't want to discuss. We want to leave that as a taboo. And it's sort of like as an older adult, I mean, I don't know the first fucking thing about parenting, but you see this represented in movies. A kid brings up sex to an adult and the adult goes, you're too young. Mm-hmm. Let's not talk about it, instead of addressing the question.
Right.
That sort of feels like society's reaction.
Yeah, for sure. And I really like how this scene ends because I feel like it's sort of this semi-saving grace to all of the awkwardness you feel watching this movie, where you go, I mean, you know, kids have a lot going on, but they're not that stupid.
No, well, that's the thing, right? I think the car works so well because we're scared for her. We know, and this is so much of what the movie kind of tells us without telling us, we know the dangers of society, and this girl doesn't.
Right.
And so we're afraid for her and seeing her reaction. And in an age today where this could be me, this could be the world, but it is more difficult to talk about nuances of sexual dynamics than it ever has been, certainly while I've been alive, to then introduce also, what about when you're young and figuring out sex. Never mind figuring out a sexual dynamic when you're older in today's world, but right. figuring just two strangers trying mm-hmm. to see if there's chemistry, right? That seems more dangerous today than, let's say, 10 years ago. But then also imagine you're in eighth grade and
right.
it just seems the most terrifying. It's so much harder to just lay blame at people, point fingers, go, this person's being a fuck, they should go to jail forever. You know, it's because they're kids and they're still trying to figure out. They don't even have the mental knowledge we should have to make things as black and white as we think they should be today.
Mm-hmm.
Because they only half know what they're talking about. Their body chemistry guides them more than anything in their brain does. And it feels super fucking dangerous. And I think that's something that, you know, it caught us off guard because it's couched in something that is very approachable, a film that gets laughs.
Right.
There is power in packing this. You know, we almost sounded disappointed on that episode that we're talking about all these transgressive films and they're not horror films. Well, I mean, they all were. And then we got to eighth grade and we went, oh no, what if this is the most transgressive mm-hmm. one? And there's nothing horror about it. It's not even one of those movies where you could laugh and go, eighth grade's a horror film, because it really does go banana joke, you know?
Right.
And so it almost took the wind out of my sails. I was almost disappointed to acknowledge, oh, maybe the power to be dangerous doesn't even lie in horror, because look how much this totally approachable show it to anyone film. Look at the buttons it's pushing and the power it has.
Mm-hmm.
And then a Serbian film came along to reassure me that there's still power in that old horror box.
So a Serbian film, I like to think of a Serbian film as like a doctorate level fucked up movie. Because I think here's how it happened for me, right? Is Martyrs was sort of the first point where I went, oh shit, okay, movies can be really fucked up. And then you go kind of down the Gaspar Noé route and you get a little bit of, you know, you go down, you get Splat Pack for the physical stuff, you do your audition, you kind of run the gamut of the ones people, you know, talk about. And you eventually in all of this will hear about a Serbian film. And
what is the reputation of this movie?
A Serbian film is widely regarded as, you know, I would argue it's probably the most popular, most fucked up movie of all time, right?
Certainly to check.
Right.
To go, hey, fucked up movie, what is it?
Yeah.
Oh, here's one.
I've definitely seen more fucked up movies, but they're far weirder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I guess this is, to go back to what I was saying about that bell curve, where eighth grade is sort of the, can you believe this is that fucked up? Serbian film is what you think of when you think of the most transgressive film that you've ever seen.
Yeah.
You go, I don't know, the one where that porn star fucks his own son.
Spoilers. Spoilers of the movies. Yeah. I mean, look, this is the thing. I think you're in a show that just gets down in the dirt with these movies. I don't want to speed past the fact that we're already coming on here and going, a Serbian film. Is it the single most fucked up thing ever made, or just among them? Right. So that's the reputation we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
That two people who are familiar with the other, with its peers, would mm-hmm. begin a conversation merely by going, so I don't know if it's the most fucked up thing humans have ever created. That's up for debate. That's the fucking right. debate. And that's the reputation of the movie. It's for me, to tell you a little something fucked up about your hosts here, it's been a rainy day film.
A yeah. Serbian oh, film. Oh, you've never seen it?
I have never seen a Serbian
Ooh,
film.
Oh, shit. Okay. So.
Because you know how much I love these movies.
Yeah.
And I had one left that's supposed to be, you know, the mother load.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to wait. I wanted to just save it.
This is interesting to me because I've seen a Serbian film, I would say, an upsetting amount of times. And
you might be the only one who's seen repeat viewings of it.
Here's the thing about a Serbian film and Martyrs and Irreversible and Cannibal Holocaust is you want to talk about reputations. I have a reputation as the guy who owns those.
Yeah.
So people go, I heard about this movie called A Serbian Film. Have you seen it? I'm like, fuck yeah, I got that shit. And then people want to come over and watch it. And then they kind of look at me and go, thank you. And then they leave.
Right.
But so let me ask you this. How quickly into this movie, or maybe you predicted this, but how quickly into this movie did you go, oh shit, real production value?
Man, I'm so glad you mentioned that. I watched this with a friend of mine who doesn't watch a lot of things like this, which was, you know, pretty amazing, you know, just in its own.
Mm-hmm.
The movie has such a reputation, and there was almost nothing like this left in my life. I mean, most of the things, you have to get pretty deep into the obscure.
Absolutely.
But you know, like I talked about a few of them on the Dangerous Movie Show and throughout the year. I see a lot of these as they come out now, foreign movies especially, that are pretty messed up. But there aren't a lot of things that, you know, a new movie, a new foreign film from, say, within the last 3 or 4 years does not get a reputation in the way that, you know, it takes time to bake a reputation like that. Mm-hmm. You can hear buzz. You can hear, oh, you see this thing that came out of Mexico 2 years ago? You know, you hear that in a certain way, but it's not a Serbian film. You mention it amongst any kind of cinephiles and everybody lights up with some, you know, some reaction to it. And there just aren't that many things like this left in my life.
Yep.
So I've built a mental picture when you hear of legend, when you hear of something like this.
Exactly.
Of what it's going to be.
Yeah.
And I imagine that, I mean,
a film that looks like The Hostel and Hostel.
Yeah, I just thought it opens on this hallway, and even just seeing what it looks like was a piece of information that was exciting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I don't know, you know, I hear things about a Serbian film, but I don't know the synopsis. I don't know what it's about. I've never seen a still intentionally from it. And it's obscure enough that you're not going to see it in, you know, the pages of Fangoria or something. It's just not really the kind of thing that gets, it's not a poppy horror movie by any stretch. Not to say that that's what Fangoria is, but you know what I mean. It's not, people don't just whip out their favorite stills from a Serbian film.
Right.
So I had no idea. And so it's one of these great experiences. It's almost, I compare it in my head to like being a Star Wars fan when I was younger and then seeing the first still of a new Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
And just going, what is this even going to be? Just show me a frame. Sure. Show me a sound. Show me anything.
Yeah.
And so it begins and it opens on this hallway and I go, oh, I guess this is what a Serbian film is. I guess this is what we're dealing with. And every little new piece of data, the way it sounds, the fact that it actually looks like a film and not some micro-budget DIY movie. Not that I have any, you know, I'm a huge champion of those things. And there's so much value in them. But, you know, it's impressive when your movie looks like a movie. And
I think
when you do something like this, you don't expect that.
I think that's how you develop that snowball of a reputation, by being a film that's really watchable, a film that's, you know, because I think not to say that the average person to watch a Serbian film,
Michael Kester, a Serbian film, really watchable. Throw that, is it too late to put it on the fucking Blu-ray?
But, you know, not that the average person to watch a Serbian film is the average film goer, but I think that even the people who look it up and are, you know, they're kind of like signing the waiver for a wild ride. It's like when you eat the hottest wings at a restaurant. You're like, you know, you're in for a bad time, but you're doing it to yourself on purpose as part of like a thing. I feel like when the movie turns on and it doesn't look like garbage, people go, okay, this is a real movie. And that makes all the fucked up shit so much worse.
Oh, yeah. I would go one further and say, it's a real movie.
Yeah.
That was my reaction.
Yeah.
I went, oh no, this movie also has the power to do these things.
Yeah.
And also the sound too is just the way the music comes up in that. It feels, you know, the way the music is mixed, you mentioned Splat Pack movies earlier. Mm-hmm. I mean, the music is mixed right up front. It sits loud right with the viewer.
Yeah.
So the music is there ready to punch you in the face when it wants to. Mm-hmm. The audio mix is dialed in and ready to really hit you. You can't get any distance from this film. Mm-hmm. And that's what the production levels do this early on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think they front load some of that too. A movie like this still is in a meta way, and maybe even in a literal way, a lot about financing and the ability to even make something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Is sort of the movie exists to also speak on, can we even get something like this done?
Right.
So that it can come at you like that and get right in your face, it just doesn't give you an ability to sit back. You can't watch it the way you watch a found DV tape.
Right.
Like you might watch, you know, we did Trouble Every Day, a sort of quasi-French extreme movie.
Mm-hmm.
When you get into some of those French extreme movies.
I would call it an extreme French movie, but not a French extreme movie.
But also, and maybe that's not a good specific example, but you get into some of those movies and they're done just at sort of a Demon Lover might have been,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can put a little distance between you and the movie just because of kind of how, just the decisions it makes, I guess.
Sure.
I don't think you can do that with the Serbian film.
I think, again, to kind of tie these together, I mentioned how Eighth Grade travels behind your defenses and kind of goes, oop, surprise, I'm fucked up.
Yeah.
And it's in there. And I feel like a Serbian film comes at your mind like a battering ram, but with the added benefit of having the keys to every wall. It like comes running in and you go, oh, fuck, I'm ready for this to be fucked up. But every time your first barrier is, but if it looks shitty, I won't care. It goes, oh, I don't look shitty. And that door flies open. And it goes, well, I mean, it's not going to have a plot. It goes, it has a compelling plot. And that door flies open. And by the time...
Well, the mystery, the fucking mystery of it kills
me. I mean,
me.
By the time you get, you know, it's a fucking battering ram, but you can't, it's almost like a battering ram that's battering nothing but your own brain.
As the movie's playing, I know something difficult is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the longer it takes to get there, the more I'm actively afraid and excited by it.
Yeah.
It has me tied in knots the way a nasty shot from Hostel would, where I'm just going, oh, please don't put that blowtorch next to that organ or whatever.
Right.
I'm going, oh, please don't let this movie, what are you going to do, movie? Like I'm on guard and I don't know about what. And the movie milks it so beautifully because it's also his reaction as he enters the hall. He signs up to do something. And I feel like the something he's going to do is the fucked up part of the movie. So what is the thing? And the movies, I mean, plot points of the movie are him sitting there going, what is the thing? Which is just a beautiful way to full on engage. You're right there with the movie. There's nothing else to look at or to think about, except, so what are we going to be doing here? Which is the legend of the film. You go, I'll watch a Serbian film, but what are we going to be doing in a Serbian film? And then it starts, and you go, okay, but where do we get to the part? Like, what are we going to be doing? He signs a contract to watch a Serbian film. And then he's like, okay, but yeah, what is it though? Like, what are we going in here for? And now you're just seeing your own experience portrayed mm-hmm. on the screen. And he goes into that hallway with the look on his face that I'm watching a Serbian film with. He goes in there and there's two guys following him with cameras, the only difference between his experience and mine right now. And he's just going, all right, I'll creep down these halls, but like, what am I going to see? Do I want to be doing this? And then there's a girl on the stairs and it's just sort of that, nope, nope, get away. What do we do? I don't want to do this. Get me out of here. And I think his reaction, seeing also the fact that he's a professional, right? That he's signed up
mm-hmm.
to basically do some sort of porn film.
Right.
And you're seeing a person who you just watched bang in the beginning of the movie. So you know what room temperature is for him.
Mm-hmm.
So when he comes in and he's on guard, you're like, oh, the professional thinks that this is going to be fucked up.
Right.
So it tells us that it's serious in a way that it wouldn't just be enough for the film to say, hey, I'm being serious.
Mm-hmm.
You really see it on his face. It's just great filmmaking.
It is. And that's the thing that I love the most about a Serbian film. It's such, I don't know, you're going to mock me for saying this, but I don't think you can disagree, is that it's such a good movie.
I don't. This might be my favorite of everything in its class.
Yeah. I mean, there are definite. If I were to make a top five list of most fucked up movies of all time, this would be on it. It wouldn't be number one. I know what number one would be, and it's yet to be knocked out. We've done it on the show.
All right.
Comment, tune in next week for that information, okay. If I remember.
Cool.
But it's you know, to go back to watchable, it's the one that earns its stripes the most.
Mm-hmm.
By the time the fucked up shit is happening, I'm disgusted, I'm uncomfortable, and I'm horrified. But the movie doesn't just go, anyway, so this guy just decides to sew some people's mouths to their butts.
Right.
It's a film that builds to a logical fucked up moment. Yeah. It's almost just there's like a cognitive disconnect that I have where when I think of the movie, because you can't think of it without thinking of that final tableau.
Mm-hmm.
My mind goes, what a fucked up movie. But my second thought goes, it does get there logically.
Yeah, certainly.
Because even Martyrs requires a certain.
why are we here? Oh, I guess this is what we're doing.
Right. There's death.
That works to Martyrs' advantage.
Absolutely. But, you know, Martyrs definitely requires a certain, I can't even think of the word. I'm too fired up.
Yeah.
What's it called when you just allow a movie to do something?
Suspension of disbelief.
Thank you.
Totally.
Martyrs requires a certain suspension of
Martyrs
disbelief.
Martyrs goes, I'm doing this to you. It's almost the way Funny Games does it, right? With that little moment.
In fact, now that we've reached the perfect moment to come up with this, I would argue that the reason both of these films are so fucking effective is because the suspension of disbelief for either one is almost zero.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tough thing because the audio and video trauma and compared to audio and visual trauma, I guess, in comparison to these other works, like I really don't want to go point for point, but you know, there is great stuff in it. There's the nasty splices that are really inventive using mm-hmm. these transitions of things that near single frame montages of brutal imagery. It works on me every time. You just cry out because you don't, you know, somebody has a knife to their cock, like a strangulator, really just like that scene that's done in movies, the taking the hostage scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dude has taken his own junk hostage. And you just don't know what the action beat of each of these frames is going to be. So you recoil in horror at all of them. And just crying out that way is one of my favorite reactions in cinema. It's why I love Theater of the Grotesque so much, because that very audible recoil of an audience to go, no, don't, I just love that so much. And it brings me to this part of the genre over and over and over again and forces me to rewatch things I don't want to see because I wait for the audience to do it. And there's also its moments like the newborn porn, which is very infamous. I, of course, love that. I think the hardest part of that to watch is that the birth footage is the single grossest thing filmable. But to get back to your point is also something that, you know, people just have home videos of in their house,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
So the grossest stuff is the least suspension of disbelief. It's the least fictional part of that scene. The actual newborn, the fucking the newborn is, you know, obviously deliberately there to antagonize the audience. So that gets less of a rise out of me than just like, ew, I don't want to watch a live birth. Get away from me.
Right.
But I think it's Cannibal Holocaust looking. It's sort of nasty, blistered showdown is the toughest of them all because there's literally no fun in it. And some of these other movies, Hostel 2 especially, sort of tantalizes and then swats you down for liking it. You know, it tries mm-hmm. to get a rise out of you and then also, how fittingly, turn you on with it as well. And so it gives the audience this really contrasty, no pun with the look of that movie intended, but it's sort of the rise and fall in the audience reaction to the movie.
Right.
The sort of, ooh, won't this be fun? A sexy hostel. And then just something nasty. That movie fucks with you in a certain way that could almost be looked at as fun. And there's no fun in the conclusion of this movie. It is the hardest art of any of these movies. I think that's why I say that, you know, in its class, it represents that area. That's its tactical advantage. It's cutting edge here, is that it doesn't play these things for laughs. It doesn't wink. It doesn't. Human Centipede's probably the best example of that, where we watch that movie and have fun with how sick it is. Mm-hmm. And the movie has fun with how sick it is. And the director clearly has fun with how sick it is. And it talks about some things. But it's not there just to show up and talk about issues. And this movie is, but it doesn't wink. And that makes it just extra tough. Look, this movie is a lot, right? There's a lot on display.
Right.
And I think the thing that's really, as a viewer watching it, I am so busy trying to hold back vomit that it is difficult for me to compute the lengthy, subtitled, quasi-socialist, state of fascism, daddy state monologues that are going on, the sort of government as the parents, restrictive, whatever it's talking about. So you're trying to digest all of that stuff, but literally digesting is also difficult while watching a Serbian film.
Mm-hmm.
So it is really difficult. I mean, I want nothing more than to just take a tonally serious deep dive into the themes of this movie. But the fact that there's too much raw viscous for you to even process that is, you know, it's a movie that no matter how hard you wanna take it on at its deepest level, it resists you. And that's what I truly love about these films, is they sort of challenge you to find the deeper layer, to find and think and meditate on it. When if you meditate on it too much, you get this sort of post-traumatic, almost like the splices of the film. You try and go, what is a Serbian film doing? And you're like, no, not that scene though. Get out. I don't want to think about that. And that's kind of the magic. I mean, I'm glad I waited this long to watch it, because I feel like a big part of this movie, there's a Movie Crypt episode on this for people who do want to get deeper into that. I haven't listened to it because I didn't want to get spoiled, but it's a sit down with the director, who's a serious guy. He's got serious stuff to say. And I think a lot of this movie talks a little bit about how the almost the government grant system in Serbia.
Yeah.
This is just a good time in my life to sort of understand how some of that works. But basically different governments where you shoot different things will incentivize the kind of movies that are made there by helping with financing.
Mm-hmm.
And in Serbia, there are these sort of, it almost becomes propaganda by default, because they will only help finance films that tell the stories they want to tell about their countries.
Sure.
Which are these hollow kind of Oscar bait. They feel like Oscar bait films.
Uh-huh.
They're hollow art films that just show imagery of things that have happened there historically that don't have a lot of deep content to them, but they make everybody feel like they are the fucking Green Book, okay? There's no other way for me to say that. They're the Green Book of Serbia. They're just making these movies over and over that feel like, well, good thing we dealt with those historical issues. We're all better for it and move on.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't get into the meat of something challenging. But I mean, that's just the seed. That's the seed that begins to talk about the issues of a Serbian film. I would recommend that Movie Crypt episode and just more, more discussion of it, if possible, you know? Get me the fuck away from the gross, delicious film that is the Serbian film.
Next time you have, like, there's not too much homework. It's like, what, 112 movies or something. If you watch 112 movies, you should be caught up for next week's episode.
That's not true at all. You don't need to look. Patreon.com/double feature. I want to thank the Patreons before I completely disagree with everything that Michael has said. The Patreons are Ben Ecker, Charles Crawford, Abbot of Unreason, Tom Leonard, Brett Hayton, Bruno Hunziker, Billy Wilson, Aaron Shore, and John. Thanks for watching a fucking Serbian film with us guys. And I laugh at you for getting you to watch Eighth Grade. Ha ha. Didn't see that coming, did you? No, I would say our year-end episode, this is our most popular episode of the year, every year.
Mm-hmm.
There are no spoilers. It is a spoiler-free look, which means you don't have to see the previous movies.
Okay, but it would also help you to listen to all the previous episodes, which we expect you to watch the previous films for.
Michael likes to encourage the homework on the year end, and I say, cut fucking class. Get out of it. Nobody's going to pay attention to your transcripts. Cut class. Get out of here. Come back. Listen to our year end episode. We'll do the homework. You do none of the homework. And then Michael and I will hash out on the show what the fuck is going on.
I already did the homework.
Oh, I haven't watched any of the movies for this year.
Watch more fucking film.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.